ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Today, I'm still in a position that I am not able to feel myself ready to compete at the standards that I need to be to play at Roland Garros.
Injuries done what almost no one else could at Roland Garros and knocked the Spaniard off his clay throne. It's a tennis heartbreak in the City of Love. So who will fill the Nadal-shaped void at the French Open when things launch in Paris this weekend? That in a moment. Plus, we have our weekend forecast in the NRL, where Origin's wreaking havoc with your tips, as well as the AFL, where the landscape's been thrown into disarray by the departure of Damien Hardwick. We'll also have the sound bites you need to hear. It's Friday Fix time. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. Christopher Clary is the New York Times tennis writer. He has covered in excess of 100 Grand Slams. He is in Paris. But Rafa Nadal is not. Christopher, it seems that even while he won't take part in the coming French Open, Rafa is the story in Paris. Whether it's Federer, Djokovic, Serena or Nadal, I feel like we've talked a lot about a changing of the guard in tennis in recent years. Is that perhaps why this moment feels so significant?
Patrick, how you doing? No, it definitely seems really weird, first of all, because it's been basically 20 years, you know, of Nadal dominating this tournament.
The greatest becomes even greater. It is a 14th Roland Garros title for the greatest player this great tournament has ever seen and ever will see.
You know, they had to build a statue to honor him. I mean, it's the French honoring the Spanish. I mean, that's supposed to happen. So basically, it's just the whole thing is it's just very strange to be in this setting which so much belongs to him and have him not be here at all. So I don't think anybody quite believes it. I think they kind of figure he's going to somehow surface from the from the clay and win the title anyway.
So if this isn't the end, it certainly feels like the beginning of the end. Do you see Roland Garros being the conclusion of his career in 2024?
Well, you know, a lot of us thought the other day when he gave his press conference in Mallorca after a long delay of not playing since the Australian Open that he might retire altogether. It was really unclear what was going to happen. I'm sure he debated it himself a little bit. Ultimately, he decided against that and decided to continue trying to heal this psoas injury that he picked up in Australia against Mackie McDonald in the second round defeat there. And he wants to come back. And he wants to come back in November at the Davis Cup Finals, I think, in Malaga, Spain. And he had mentioned that as a target. Then he wants to try to have one more, you know, good, solid farewell season in 2024.
My ambition is to try to stop, to give myself an opportunity to enjoy next year. That's probably going to be my last year in a professional tour. No, that's my idea.
He didn't definitively say he would retire in 2024, but he said that was the likely scenario. There's no reason not to believe Rafa is going to try. You know, he's been trying like crazy since he came on the tour, since he was born, probably. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But, I mean, it is a possibility that he won't be able to make it and he won't be able to come back and play again.
Chris, let's talk about one of the young guys coming up, inverted commas. He's only world number one at the moment. He's also Spanish. He's also only 20 years of age. You wrote about Carlos Alcaraz perhaps being the smart money at this tournament. Tell us why that's the case.
Well, Carlos, as you know, your listeners probably know, is box office, just a spectacular tennis player.
Oh, he's found him! Sensational from Carlos Alcaraz.
Kind of a mix of Federer and Nadal in some ways in terms of his style. He can beat you so many different ways. He can sit back on the baseline and with explosive forehand power and great drop shots, beat you from there, or he can happily come to net and play attacking tennis and shorten the points. So at age 20, he's already been number one a couple different times. He's number one coming into the French. I mean, it's no coincidence when you've watched him play. And, you know, for me, he's the favorite. I mean, he had struggles in Rome. He lost to a Hungarian qualifier there and a defeat I don't think any of us saw coming. But I think in a way that could help him because it's allowed him, after a really successful clay court season, you know, winning the title in Madrid, winning the title in Barcelona, it's going to allow him to come into the French Open physically fresh, which is so important. It's a grind. It's a grueling tournament. For me, I'd pick him. But clearly, you know, it's a situation where, you know, is he going to be able to handle the pressure of being number one seed and coming into this tournament and with Novak Djokovic in the field? We'll see. There are other guys who also are dangerous.
In the women's draw, it feels wide open. Who's the biggest threat to world number one and defending champion, Iga Swiatek?
Look, I mean, you got to say Iga is the favorite, no doubt. The women's game is more open in some ways than it's been in the past, but Iga Swiatek is a fantastic clay court player. She's a solid number one still in the rankings. That could change if she ends up losing early at the French. The only thing I would say that's of interest and of concern on that really is the injury that she suffered in Rome.
That is going to do it. Swiatek has thrown in the towel. And that is going to do it for the two-time defending champion. Her 14-match win streak comes to an end due to an upper leg injury on her right leg.
I think Iga deserves to be the favorite if she's, as she says, getting healthy and feeling good. She just moves so well on the clay. She's so confident on it. It just suits her game with her big topspin forehand, kind of Nadal style that she has. But, you know, there are two other women who've had great seasons so far. One of them won the Australian Open, Aryna Sabalenka. Definitely can play on clay. It's not her best surface, but it's awfully good on it. And then there's Elena Rybakina, who played Sabalenka in that great Aussie Open final and won Wimbledon and just won the Italian Open. She's a huge hitter of the ball, pretty flat, but she really moves well on the clay despite her height and also very dangerous. So I see the winner coming from that group of three. But because of the way women's tennis goes, it's very deep. If they falter, certainly room for others to come in.
We've got 2 weeks of really exciting tennis coming our way. You're going to be courtside. Thanks so much for giving us your analysis, Christopher. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Let's get into the weekend forecast, and we will start with the NRL. Origin period is always a little bit weird in clubland. A bunch of teams get a bye. Those who are playing are doing so without their best players. But it's also crucial for those exact reasons. It plays an enormous role in shaping the season of your side. And I'm especially interested in the Warriors-Broncos clash on Saturday. It looms as a doozy. 2 points separate the teams on the ladder. Brisbane head to Napier in Kiwiland. The boys from Brisbaneland are missing some enormous bodies, enormous talents, and enormous names. Patrick Carrigan and Payne Haas are the absent muscle. Reece Walsh and Selwyn Cobbo, the absent speed and flair. Thankfully, Adam Reynolds has overcome a head knock, but the Broncos are staring at 3 straight losses if they are rolled by a Kiwi side coming off the bye. How pleased must Raiders coach Ricky Stewart be that Josh Papali'i and Jack Whiteson have retired from Origin footy? The pair will be invaluable against a Bunny side that Whiteson will ironically be playing for in 2024. Souths, they are coming off a painful defeat to the Eels and are without Latrell Mitchell, Cam Murray and Jai Arrow, cause Origin. That's a lot of absent muscle against the formidable Green Machine pack. Maybe the big Origin story this week was Kalyn Ponga and Dane Gagai both being left out of the Maroon squad. Their misfortune is Newcastle's game as the Knights take on a Manly team that can't quite figure out where it sits this season. That's aptly reflected by their 9th place on the table. The Seagulls have no Tommy or Jake Trbojevic, and skipper Daly Cherry-Evans is also not available. This has Ponga / Gagai show written all over it. Look out. A reminder, you can catch every minute of every game live on the ABC Listen app. In the AFL, we are talking with Fox Footy's Drew Jones. Drew, enormous week off the field. I feel like next week could see lots of coverage around Carlton. Depending on how the clash with Sydney goes tonight, why is there so much at stake for Michael Voss?
Hey, Stacky, yeah, it's massive at the SCG. I think when you take into consideration the recent run of Carlton, 5 losses in their last 6, their only win was against lowly West Coast. And then Carlton were so disappointed internally with the progress of the team over the last 6 weeks that they actually put their president up to speak to the media in Luke Sayers on the Monday just to try and stamp out any chat about Michael Voss's future.
Absolutely. Vossie's our coach through to the end of next year. Michael Voss has been a tremendous asset for this football club, and we're looking forward to doing great things with him in the future.
It's pretty unusual for this early in the season for a team to decide to do that. So that, to me, almost intensified the discussion around Michael Voss. And so the game at the SCG against the Swans, this is a game they just simply have to win. The injuries to the Swans' key pillars are just ridiculous at the moment. John Longmire is facing a real challenge to get a competitive team on the park. And normally you would always back the Swans to be a good chance to win in a big game at the SCG. But on this occasion, their personnel crisis has just got to a tipping point, you would think. And that just ramps up the pressure even more on Carlton to get the result that they need. So if it doesn't go well for the Blues and they play that sort of messy, scrappy style that we saw against Collingwood last week at the MCG, there could be big problems. This is almost an elimination final, Stacky. It's going to be a fascinating one.
It's wild to think that Richmond lost a triple premiership coach this week. Do you think we see a Tiger bounce against Port Adelaide as Damien Hardwick watches on as a non-coach?
I spoke to Will Schofield this week, Stacky, and he guaranteed that Richmond would win this game because there is just an emotional bounce when something happens with your senior coach at your football club. We saw it from North Melbourne last week. They should have beaten the Swans, but for an interchange cap infringement. And they had a really decimated team, but they just found extra energy. They just found something within themselves, so that there will be a bounce of some sort from the Tigers. And they might even feel like they're trying to send off Damien Hardwick. They know that he'll probably be watching, maybe at the ground, but probably at home with his family. And it'll be a big deal to Dimmer to see his team play well. And they'll want to play well first up under Andrew McWalter. Much loved figure at Richmond. He's been there a long time. Wasn't a great player in his day, but is highly rated as a coach. Neil Baum said during the week,
actually, he's not that dissimilar in some ways to Craig McRae in that he's certainly a bit understated, quite humble, but, you know, really knows his footy, really bright about his footy. Good people manager, gets on well with people, doesn't take himself too seriously, but really understands the game well.
So expecting a big one from the Tigers, but Yata Pulte have won their last seven games in a row, so the Power should be pretty tough to beat.
While you'll up travel to Naarm, Luke Jackson facing his old club at the MCG. The Dockers are on a roll. An enormous ruck battle on the cards. Is this the moment that the Dockers announced they are going to have a say in this season after all?
Well, they're really well positioned to give Melbourne a big shake at the MCG. They don't get to play on the home of football too much, so they should be fired up for that. They lose Michael Walters through injury, but you mentioned the ruck battle. Sean Darcy and Luke Jackson, a great 1-2 punch. We might even see Jackson rolling through the midfield, which is what Simon Goodwin always thought that he might do when he was a Demon. Then Max Gawn copped a lot of attention from the Power last week, so the Demons will be smarting from that. They've had their culture attacked through the media, so there's no doubt the Demons are going to want to bounce back, and they are a great football team. But without Clayton Oliver, who's only missed one of his last 49 games, there is a hole to fill in the midfield. They lose Lockie Hunter through suspension as well, so the Dockers are in form. They've won their last three, and they had a really trademark win under Justin Longmuir against the Demons at the MCG last season.
And they're going to record a famous victory at the MCG. It's a win for the Dockers, but it's a win for the Dreamers.
And so we know they are capable. I think this is just about match of the round.
Drew Jones, we're looking forward to the round of footy. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Stacky.
Time for soundbites. We know Origin starts this week coming, and Storm coach Craig Bellamy called on his former fullback and now Maroons boss to start Harry Grant ahead of Ben Hunt at hooker for Queensland. Fair to say Billy Slater was not taking advice from the one-time New South Wales coach.
He had his chance to build his team in Origin. Sorry, Craig.
Savage burn. The only thing worse than getting burned by your ex-player is maybe getting burned by yourself. Here's Jimmy Butler speaking about how Miami would prepare for Game 5 of the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals after their Game 4 defeat.
We're going to listen to some music. You know, we're going to drink some beers back there. We're going to go have some wine. You fall back on, you know, your habits. And myself and my teammates, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to smile. We're going to be in this thing together like we always are. And we're going to go get one on the road.
They lost by 13 points after being thoroughly outplayed by the Celtics in Boston. You might have seen Brooks Koepka became the first active LIV player to win a major this week. By extension, it's kind of a victory for Rebel Tour CEO Greg Norman. But the American, Koepka, was not in a rush to share the love.
Have you heard from Greg Norman yet?
I've called my wife and that's it. That's the only person I'm really interested in talking to right now. I haven't texted. My boys are here, so I'm just hanging with them and talking to my wife, and I can feel my phone buzzing as we're even talking right now. So I don't know. Last I looked, I think there was like 600 text messages, so I'll go through them.
Actually, I still haven't heard back from Brooks either. Might have left me on read. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Poppy Penny. Thanks to Stan Sport, the Italian International, the US Open and SEN for the extra audio used in this episode.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.